This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. It took a little longer than expected for blues man Ron Hunter to get his big break. More than 50 years, to be exact. He started playing as a young kid next to his dad on the porch of their log cabin in rural Winston-Salem. His dad's soul told him to come up with his own style, and Ron took that advice seriously. In 2006, after 5 decades of playing the blues, along with country and folk, he confounded a group of music writers from Mississippi Living Blues magazine. They saw him perform in Charleston, South Carolina, and told him they could not figure out who he sounded like. Turns out Big Ron sounded like himself. He had developed that style all his own. Ron was profiled in the magazine, later got the support of the Music Maker Relief Foundation. That's an organization dedicated to promoting pioneers of Southern music. Big Ron Hunter has since toured in Europe and Australia. He's performed for thousands at the New Orleans Jazz Festival and on stage at New York's Lincoln Center. Today, he is known to many as the happiest man in blues, and we will find out why when we meet Big Ron Hunter. Welcome to the State of Things. What a pleasure to have you here.
Well, it's such an honor to be here. Thank you all so much for inviting me.
It's great to have you. Talk about those early days now, growing up on that farm in Winston-Salem.
Yes, I learned quite a bit. I learned how to work. That's one thing I learned how to do. And I was raised as an only child, so I spent a lot of time, using my imagination. Talking to myself and all that kind of stuff. If anybody see you talking to yourself now, they think you're crazy.
No. They think you got Bluetooth and you're talking on your cell phone.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Here's the thing, though. We're talking about the work because you worked with your stepdad, right?
Yeah.
And he was a sharecropper.
Yeah.
Tobacco. Right?
Tobacco.
That is some hard work.
Yeah. I've been in a mini tobacco field. Started out young. Cutting wood for the back of barn and then getting it out of the fields, planting it. We used to have what they call a plant barret, a bed. And it'd be covered with a, big linen cloth, to keep the plants from frost from biting the plants. And so we'd get the plants out of there, and then we'd take them to the field and plant them.
That might be the neatest part of the job, because when you went to pick that tobacco, that was messy, sticky work.
You start out in the morning, you get to the field about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and you got all that dew on, and it's cold. And by 10 o'clock, the sun is out, and it's baking you and turns all that sand and dirt into just your clothes will just be hard on you, be dried like concrete on you,
Well, I suppose there were some advantages to being an only child until you were the only sibling in the field, and then
yes.
You probably wished you had 10 brothers.
The work was hard. It was hard on the back, hard on the legs, and you had to get a mind for it too. I'm gonna stick to this. If you're priming and you're going out to row, you gotta get a mind to finish that row, because sometimes those rows, they be, I've seen some as a mile long, tobacco row. And so.
And they get longer as you get to the end, don't they?
It does. You're sweating, back hurting, arms hurting, legs hurting.
So when did you start playing the guitar?
I got my first guitar. My first guitar was a Mickey Mouse guitar. And I probably was about. When I started knowing what I was doing, I think I was in about the fifth grade.
What kind of music were you playing?
I was playing blues. I started out on the porch playing blues with my dad, and he would teach me how to make it talk.
Can you? Oh, what does that mean?
Making it talk, you can take. He would say, Gimme, long distance, just want to call that brown-eyed girl of mine. Little stuff like
that.
Would
he show you where to put your fingers, or are you watching him and then trying to imitate him?
Because
then it's kind of mirror image.
I would watch him.
Yeah.
I would watch him, and then he would tell me. So he would say, gimme. He said, gimme, and I'd say, gimme. He said, gimme. And we'd do that for a little while. you know,
play that kind of music.
Yeah, play that kind of
music.
But
you also were listening. I mean, you and I are the same age. Turns out, born the same year.
Yeah.
And so then you're coming of age at a time when we're hearing, you know, blues and rock and roll and soul music. All of that stuff is all over the radio, and I suspect a lot of country music here on the local radio stations in North Carolina.
Yeah.
Were you influenced by all that music?
Yes. I used to listen to Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs, you know, and they were one of my favorites, you know, Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs. Yeah. And, Lord, I listened to Elvis Presley, James Brown, Muddy Waters. I listened to all those cats, you know, and a couple of them I seen live, you know, James Brown, I seen Muddy Waters live. And the Beatles came out at that time, so I learned the Beatles. The Monkees came out. I learned the Monkees and Elvis Presley.
You actually played a Monkees song, I guess you got almost famous for, right? One Monkees song, yeah. Stepping Stone?
Yeah, I got famous on my bus for playing it.
Let's hear that one. Yeah, so you would bring your guitar on the bus?
Yeah, I would bring my guitar on the bus, and I'd sit in the back of the bus, and my neighbors and some of my friends on the bus, you know, they could sing, you know, and I ain't sing that much, you know, I could sing a little bit. But we'd sit in the back of the bus, and I think the Monkees came on Monday night or Tuesday night, and they would always bring a new song on every night they come on each week. And so I would learn the song that night, and then the next day we'd get on the bus, we'd sing it. And so one of them was I'm Not Your Stepping Stone.
What was your version of that?
We do not your stepping stone. Not your stepping stone. And I don't know the words you're reading all my fashion magazines.
Oh yeah.
I hadn't played in a long time. Yes.
But that made you a hit on the bus, right?
It sure did. Not your stepping stone. Not your stepping stone. That was it, you know.
Now, your mom, you talked about being an older child, but then your mom left. She went up to New York, right?
Yeah. She moved to New York when I was 6 months old. And, you know, to get a better job, living better. Back in those days, the South wasn't too good for, you know, us, you know, as blacks, you know. And so everybody was moving up New York, you know, and up north, getting good jobs, you know. And so that's what my mom had to
what
do.
Was your, you grew up in a neighborhood, but you were in a rural area,
yeah,
right?
I was in a rural area.
One of the few black families in that area?
Yes, because I think we were the only black family within 4, maybe 5 miles. Mm. And but I had a good neighborhood, good kids in my neighborhood, good people in our neighborhood. The folks in the neighborhood, they respected my dad and everything there, and we all respected each other, and we, you know, learned to work together. Good people.
So what was that like for you, though, with your mom up in New York, and now you're down here on the farm? Of course, she was probably sending money back and helping out with the family. She got herself a job, right?
Right. She got herself a job. And, of course, I hadn't lived with her in a while, so I didn't know her that well, you know. And so, excuse me, I didn't know her that well. So when she came back to pick me up to get me to take me to New York, I didn't want to go. So we were living in this little house, little shack, and I remember when she came to get me, and I ran down through the woods running from her because I knew she came to take me away. And so she left me. She let me stay. She said, well, he doesn't want to go, so I'm going to leave him here. And she cried. I remember seeing her crying because her baby couldn't go back with her. So I just stayed here, and I was raised here, and I love it.
Picked up some siblings, or you would have, right?
Yeah.
And what was that like then?
I have met my brothers and sister. I had a sister and a brother that lived here with my grandfather. And so I'd always go visit them. My mom never take me to visit them. And that's how I kept up with my family like that, you know. Mm. And every now and then my mom, she would come and I remember seeing her when I was 16, you know, 15. And she came to visit me and we talked and everything. And
What were you thinking about with your future? Were you, or when did you begin to imagine music as a career, or did you ever?
Oh, I always imagined that. Ever since, you know, the guitar had been with me for a long time. But I think by the time I was in maybe the sixth grade in school, I knew I wanted to be a musician. I wanted to play music. And that was my dream. I used to dream every night. And there's two dreams I had. One was being married with a beautiful wife and a bunch of kids that love me. And this is as a kid. I'm dreaming this dream every night. And the other dream was being on stage playing for a crowd of folks. And this was when I was young. This was a continuous dream that I had for years. Until I start chasing girls, you know.
We'll talk about how one of those dreams came true for Big Ron Hunter, the blues artist and music maker of Relief Foundation, also a member of that family. Just ahead, we're going to find out how he got his start in the music world, and we'll talk about that on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.
It was you. It was you, sweetheart, calling on me to come to see. Through my eyes, baby, through my eyes, through my eyes, through my eyes. If you could just see yourself through my eyes.
This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio, talking to blues man Big Ron Hunter, known as the happiest man in blues, toured internationally, been at New York's Lincoln Center and the New Orleans Jazz Festival, and now he's here on the State of Things. So you really made it big now that you're here. Hey, tell us how. So now you talked about these dreams you had. You really wanted to make it big. You were playing. You got your start playing on the porch, a kind of a call and response. When did the blues finally, because you were playing all kinds of music, right?
Yeah. I was playing soul and funk and little jazz, playing bluegrass. I love bluegrass.
In fact, you play a little banjo, too.
Yeah, I play a little banjo. Yeah, I just did a banjo show not too long ago, Paul Brown show.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Brown on the Blue Ridge.
Yes, sir.
Paul is a great guy.
He's a public radio guy.
Yeah, he is.
Well, that's very cool. So you did that. You've got all these forms kind of swimming around. You're playing on the back of the bus. You're playing the monkeys. You're playing. That Gloria was another song you did on the bus, right?
Yeah. Gonna come around here now, just about midnight. She makes you feel so good. She makes everything all right. And her name is G L O R I G L O R I Yeah. And then I learned that little lead to it there.
There you go, Gloria, Big Ron Hunter. And that song, Van Morrison, of course, wrote that song.
Yeah.
He was with a group called Them in 64.
Yeah.
Made it big, but so many other bands, the Doors and Patti Smith version of that, I think is the knockout version of all time. And what you just did there, that's a song that's pretty darn simple, and yet it really does open itself to a lot of interpretation.
It does. Yes. Really simple, good rhythm. Easy to sing, easy to remember.
As long as you can spell.
Yeah. That's a good way to learn to play on, too.
So what about the blues now? And were you thinking about, because I understand, too, that when you were thinking seriously about a career in music, your stepdad said,
I like Bob Dylan, And I liked a lot of, well, I was playing acoustic guitar is what happened. And so whenever I wrote my songs, I wrote them on acoustic. And so I just loved to play acoustic. And as I was coming up, I didn't have nobody else to play with me. And I was used to having backup and everything. You know, somebody to play rhythm while I played lead, or somebody played drums. Excuse me. Forgot about that button.
We got that little green button there.
Forgot about that little green button there, you know.
That's okay.
I got to put that on the brain. But anyway, so I didn't have all these musicians to back me up, so I had to learn how to play all the parts. So I learned to play the bass part, and I learned to play the rhythm part. I learned to play the lead part, and I learned to put them all together. And I tried playing with my feet. I would tune the guitar to like an open E or an open G, and I would play with my feet and play with my hand, play the rhythm with my feet and play the other part with my hand. But that's just too hard to do, you know, and you got to be in really, I couldn't even try it now. I might could try it now. But anyway, I tried to do it that way. But that was too hard.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard enough. You could imitate Hendrix and play with your teeth.
Hendrix and play with her teeth. But speaking of Hendrix, I used to have this, you know, what they call a record player, you know, back in my days, a record player. And you had like three or four different speeds, 45, 33, and 33 and a half or something like that. So you could slow it down, slow the record down. And I used to stay up about all night long on the weekends and learn Hendrix songs.
Man.
And I was slow to learn the leads. I would slow the record down real slow, and that's where I'd learn the leads on it.
Man, a lot of people gave up guitar when he started playing.
Right.
So the fact that you stuck with it is pretty good.
Yeah.
But it turned out you went to Reynolds High School, right?
Yeah.
And then you went to Forsyth Technical. And took a range of classes because really your dad said you need to get a job.
Well, I got a job, you know, when I was there at home with him, and with a band. Matter of fact. With a band. And what the band did, the band was called the Ovations. And I think I was young. I was 17 then. And the guy that worked with, my dad worked with him a little bit. They had a stone company called Dixon Stone Company.
Mm-hmm.
And so one night this guy came to my house about 7 or 8 o'clock at night, knocked on the door, and asked for me. And he says, look, I got a band, it's called the Ovations, and we need a guitar player. And this guy talked to my mom and dad. So he had $600 in $1 bills. And he showed that to my dad and to my mom and said, this is what we want to pay him for doing a show with us. And so my dad says, of course, yes.
Kind of changed his mind right there on the spot.
Yeah, right there on the spot. So, you know, I talked with him, and he told me what I had to do, and so I joined the band. And on, I think it was on like a Wednesday, we had rehearsal. We rehearsed all day long. We had 50 songs.
Well,
so I had to learn 50 songs within 2 days. So we rehearsed all day long. And take a lunch break, and then we would rehearse the rest of the afternoon. And I did that for 2 days on Wednesday and Thursday. And then that Friday night was showtime, and Saturday night was showtime. So I learned 50 songs in 2 days.
How'd it go that first night?
It went well. Yeah. Went well. Because, you know, I was just a lead guitar player. You know, I didn't have to sing or nothing, but.
But you had to know a couple of notes.
Yeah.
Well, were you improvising against the rhythm track then?
See, what happened was I listened to the radio all the time, and I listened to the TV. So anything that came on TV, I would learn, even the shows like the Beverly Hillbillies and Hee Haw and all those shows. I'd learn all the tunes that come on there. Roy Clark, I'd learn all those tunes. And so Green Button.
Right, what? You do that. I'll ask the next question because I want to know what kind of music the Ovations were playing, and if that was stuff that was popular, kind of an R&B band. Or?
Yeah, they would. they would play pop music. So everything that I heard on the radio, they were playing. They were playing stuff like Stormy Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Back in those days, old tie a yellow ribbon round the old oak tree. They were doing stuff like
that. Wow, okay.
You know.
You still remember some of those songs?
Some of it I remember.
Some of it you choose to forget.
Yeah, I choose to forget it. But anyway, I was playing with them. We were doing Chuck Berry stuff. I forgot the key. Yeah, D. Hey. Anyway.
Great stuff. So you're playing with this band now, and how old were you at the time?
At the time, I was 17.
All right. So
We played in bars, excuse me. Mm-hmm. But when we played in bars, I had to stay away from the bar. They said, now, Ronnie, don't go near the bar. Because you're too young, just stay around the stage. So I just stayed around
the
stage.
Did you behave yourself?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh. It was easy to do. But there was lots of ladies checking me out, you know, even though I was 17.
Well, that's encouraging. You did. Now, and also, just before that, now, you signed up for a school talent show, right?
Yes. Now, this was earlier. This was back when I was in probably the seventh grade. I was going to what they call a 9-10. No, I'm sorry. 7th, 8th, and 9th grade school, which was called Northwest Junior High. And I was in the 7th grade. And matter of fact, there used to be a guy they called him Bob Gordon. They used to have the Bob Gordon show.
Oh, TV, kind of a kid show.
Yeah, a kid show, mm-hmm. Bob Gordon. So one morning we woke him up, we're practicing. And this is like 9 o'clock in the morning, 8:30, 9 o'clock, we were practicing in the carport. And we didn't know, I didn't know that Bob Gordon lived across the street. So we were over there playing and practicing our song. And our song was this song called Time Is On My Side.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a Rolling Stones song, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was. What, Rolling Stone? Time and
yeah.
Time. Yeah, yeah.
Time is on my side. Yes, it is. So that was one of the songs we were going to do in the talent show. So we're out on the carport, and here comes this guy on his little scooter with his pajamas on.
And you knew it. You didn't know he lived across the street, but you
know.
Would have recognized him from TV.
Right,
maybe
right.
Not with his pajamas, right. But yeah.
So he pulls up on his little scooter that he rides in the parade, you know.
Did he have the fez? Was he wearing the hat?
And he pulls up in his pajamas and everything. And he's half asleep, and he says, look, you all are going to have to cut that noise out because I'm trying to get some sleep. And then he talked to us. He says, what are y'all doing? You know, and we said we were practicing, rehearsing for a talent show. He said, well, maybe later on I'll talk to you and try to get you on my show. But right now, quiet down so I can get some sleep. And so he just got on his little scooter and rode off back across the street. And he was about 3 houses down, and he drove up the hill there and went back home.
Put a little more time in his sleep.
Yeah, and I said, that's Bob Gordon. Wow.
Well, wait a minute. Did he ever let you on the show?
I don't think we ever got on there. Right.
You know how that goes.
Yeah.
Well, what about writing songs now? Because you've written your own. You've written
songs. Yes. I learned writing songs from Guitar Gabriel. I met Guitar Gabriel on Old Cherry Street, and it's been a while. I can't even remember the year now. It's probably in the 80s. It was in the 80s. And I was driving down the street, and I saw this guy playing the guitar sitting in the front yard. And I passed it, and I backed my truck up, and I jumped out of the truck and ran over there to hear him play. And I told him I play guitar, and he said, go get your guitar and bring it. And excuse me, where my green button?
He's got a little button here.
Yeah,
that.
I'm gonna have to get... I'm going to have to get used to using this green button.
Well, you can take that one with you. We got plenty more.
Okay, practice. Practice, homework.
I'm talking to Big Ron Hunter here on the State of Things. He's a blues player and has been doing it for a long, long time and is now sharing his story with us. You're talking about meeting Guitar Gabriel for the first time.
Guitar Gabriel told me one time, he says, Ronnie, he says, everybody has the blues. He says, even babies have the blues when they cry for milk, you know, they have the blues. He says, what you need to do is learn how to make your own blues songs, play your own blues songs. And then I started writing, you know, and you know, I was writing before that, but I wasn't writing, you know, blues songs, you know. Yeah. I was writing songs, you know, the way I felt and all that kind of stuff, you know. And it really, I didn't find out till later on, that's the same thing, you know. If you're feeling sad or whatever, that's a blues song.
Maybe you can do one for us now. Is Going For Myself, is that your song?
Yeah, that's mine. I wrote that, the way I wrote that song, it was in 1970. I wrote that song in 1970. What's the bicentennial year? 76.
76, yeah.
The beginning of 76, you know, I used to live out there in the country in a log cabin back out in the woods, and we had a telephone, one of those old dial-in telephones, and at my house, somebody's always home. My mama's home, daddy's home, somebody's always there. So the first of the year in 1976, I called home and nobody answered the phone. And that was on the second. So I called home on the third and still no one answered the phone. Called home on the fourth. My mom says, son, you need to come home because your daddy's gone. And so that's how and when I wrote Going For Myself. Because, and the way it is, we're going for myself if you lose your mom and you lose your dad and your sisters and brothers are gone. They're doing their own thing. You don't have nobody but yourself. And so I wrote the song about you got to go for yourself. That's how I wrote that song, Going For Myself, because my dad was gone.
Can we hear that song now?
Sure. This is one thing my daddy taught me to do, too. He taught me to pick. So I'm going to give you just a little bit of picking. Then I'm going to go to Big Ron Hunter, because he said, son, stop framing on that guitar and pick that thing. Well, don't you worry, don't be ashamed to cry. You know I love my woman, yes I love my woman. I saw a wave, bye-bye, honey. I love my mother. My father's in heaven, y'all. I'm out here on my own now, trying to have a little fun. Can I have a little fun? I'm going for myself. For myself, myself. If I didn't need money, I need a whole lot of money, y'all. To live a Christian life, that's my life. You know my outside appearance. How much do I have to give? I love my mother. My father's in heaven, y'all. I'm out here on my own, but I'm not alone. Trying to have a little fun, y'all. Can I have a little fun? I'm going for myself. For myself, myself. I'm going for myself. myself. I believe in the Father. I believe in the Son, Jesus. I believe in the Holy Spirit. And they're all in one. I love my mother. My Father's in heaven, y'all. I'm out here on my own, y'all, trying to have a little fun. Can I have a little fun? Can I have a little fun? I'm going for myself. For myself, myself. I'm going for myself. For myself, 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 myself. For myself.
They call him the happiest man in blues. Woo! He's Big Ron Hunter, and he's with me on the. What a great song that is.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break here, and I want to come back and talk about this happiness in blues and a little bit about what we heard there and also how important religion is to you, because
yes,
that's also a part of that song.
Okay.
And we're going to do that after this break.
Okay.
When my conversation with Big Ron Hunter continues on The State of Things. Please stay with us.
My. Sing the blues again, baby. I'm back on the road singing the blues again.
This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Big Ron Hunter's with me, blues artist based out of Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and known as the happiest man in blues. You got going in blues music, but tell us how that, it was a while before you actually kind of made a career in the blues, right?
Yeah, well, I had a family. Mm-hmm. I had two kids, a wife and two kids, and I worked at a fertilizer plant for about 25 years.
You had an interesting job there.
Yeah, very, very, very. It's a tough job.
Tell us what you were doing.
I was working with chemicals with like sulfuric acid, nitrogen solution, anhydrous ammonia, nitrogen, ammonia sulfate, all kinds of solution, all kinds of chemicals, and along with sand and a few other things, potash and superphosphate to make fertilizer that you put on your lawns and that you put on these nice turfs out there on the golf course.
Yeah, but part of that job included like blowing stuff up, right?
I learned how to blow fertilizer, break it up with using dynamite, liquid dynamite. And so what we do.
So you literally blow stuff up.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
go ahead.
Learn how to blow stuff up, yeah. Yeah, we drill a hole in a big pile of fertilizer and you know, and then we use a 9-volt battery to ignite that thing, get it going. So we drill a hole in there and pack the dynamite in there real deep. And then we'd run out to the edge, you know, probably about 25 feet or so, and holler, "Fire in the hole," and boom, put those two wires together on that battery. And it would blow, boom, and then we start running so the pile of fertilizer wouldn't fall down on us.
What was the point of that? I mean,
why were
you doing that?
When we'd make the fertilizer, it would be so hot. And then when we put it in the bays, you know, before we load it on the trucks, it'd sit for a while. And so since it gets so hot, it would get hard like concrete.
I get it.
And so we'd have to break it up, you know, so it'd fall out in the powder form, in the fertilizer form, you know, in order to load it on a truck so they can take it to the fields or wherever they're going to take it or where we can put it into bags.
Eventually, you got an indoor job.
I ended up running a machine called the ammoniator. And so the ammoniator is where I mix all those chemicals up with minerals to make that nice peel. And that was a job because I had a little hole. I had a little small hole I had to keep, use a bar to keep clean it out with a bar. So I was very strong from, you know, using the bar all day long, keeping the hole clean and working in hot temperatures, you know, 125 degrees. In order to make the fertilizer, we were using boiling point, you know, gas and oil at boiling point, which is like 300 degrees, 320 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's hot.
Wow. Well, so what about, what's happening with music at this point? Are you also, are you playing around? Are you still in bands?
I am playing around and I'm enjoying it and I'm playing in bands. I got my own band called the Big Ron Hunter Blues Band, and we just have lots of fun.
And you had an experience in church that changed the path of your life, right?
Yes. What changed the path in my life? I believe I would have been somewhere earlier if I just wasn't full of fear. I was so full of fear that I wouldn't do too much. You know, I was had offered for auditions to do things, you know, but I just was afraid to do it, you know. I don't know why, but I just had fear in me, you know, and I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of friends and just certain things that I just wouldn't do when it came to, you know, becoming a man, being able to do anything that I really wanted to do. And so I went to this church one time and this man prayed for me. And the way he prayed in other tongues. And so I didn't know what he was praying about. You know, I went to church with my girlfriend. That's the only way I got into church, following that pretty girl, you know. So, and so I said, well, what did he say? And she said, he said that you need to put away the things of the world and pick up the things of God. I said, wow, he said all that in, you know, that language that he was using. But she understood what he was saying. So I said, okay. And so later on, and that was in 1985. Mm-hmm. And then later on, he prayed for me, and I got saved, you know. And I asked Jesus to come into my heart. And he came into my heart. And then I lost all fear. Mm-hmm. I was never afraid again to do anything. And so, and then I stopped doing it, stopped drinking, and it's easy for me to do for some reason. You know, it was just so easy. And so I stopped drinking and doing those other things that I was doing.
Yeah,
you know?
And then more time and obviously the courage to play out.
And
I want to ask you about this because you had the opportunity once you did that, and now you're taking more gigs and saying yes to more opportunities, including the chance to play with R&B legend Nappy Brown.
I met up with some friends, and I just was with them this past weekend, the King Bees. So the King Bees invited me to come play with them, and they were doing a tour with Nappy Brown. So I said, yeah. And what they wanted me to do is open up for Nappy with the acoustic guitar and then come back on and play electric guitar with the band.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And so what I would do is, I'll give you a little short demonstration. What I would do is I would play songs like... back on the road, singing the blues again. And so I would do that, and then I would go play with the band. And I'd play about 3 or 4 songs. And so the next day I ran into, let me finish Nappy Brown first, and then I'll go to that. So I go up on stage to play with Nappy Brown after I do the opening act. And so when I got there, Rob said, look, Ron, he says, Nappy Brown doesn't like for you to play loud. He says, because, you know, he'll stop the show and tell you to turn it down. So I said, okay. So I turned my guitar down real low. And the way they put me, the stage was small. So Rob was on this end. We were about elbow room apart. And Nappy Brown was he was right here, I'm right over his shoulder playing. And so he got to singing, and he sounds so good. And I was playing behind him, and I just kept on, you know, every time. And he sounds so good, he just drawed the playing out of me. And so I was kicking it back, killing it back. And he stopped the show. He said, oh, wait a minute. Y'all, wait a minute, 1 minute. And he looked at me, and I got nervous. My heart started thumping then, you know. And I said, what did I do? Did I do something wrong? He says, no, you turn it up. So I looked at Rob. He said, turn it up. He said, you turn it up. I said, okay. And then he got back to singing and started feeling good to him. He was all over the floor, you know, rolling and singing. And I was just throwing down with it, you know. It was just so much fun.
But that meant two things. First of all, he liked your playing, but obviously you've got a performer here in Nappy Brown who does not want to be upstaged. He is the star.
Yeah, he's the star.
So he understood two things. Number one, you're awfully good, but two, you know how to play in time and with the band.
Yeah.
To sound like part of the band and not like a solo.
Yeah. Well, I learned that from years back when I was young. I learned how to jam because we jammed a lot, you know. Even when I was 16, I used to go to jams all the time, you know, and I loved it. So I learned how to jam at an early age. And when you learn how to jam, you can play with anybody.
Because you're listening. And you also. But that brings us to one of the, I think, the more interesting things about the blues, because that for me is, I love all music, but you know, most other music, classical jazz, I love it, but it comes to me as a stranger, right? It comes to my house, knocks on the door. We have a great conversation, a nice dinner, and then it goes home. Blues is here always. It's always from the inside out. And it's so simple. Right? I mean, you know. I mean, you've got three chords.
Right,
you know,
that's
you start
right.
in the key of E, then you're going to go up to the four chord, which
that's
would be
right.
in that case an A, and
a.
then to the B, and you've got three chords. And a 12-bar blues, pretty formulaic. But it's what you do with that as a player, and particularly playing the lead and finding the improvisations, that makes it unique every single time you play.
Every time. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you could give us a sample. What we've got is a backing track, so we've got somebody playing those chords with a little bit of rhythm in the key of E. So they're going to start there, and then you're going to play over the top of it. All
right? Yes, I'd like to do that. That's fun.
All right, let's hear it. There he is, Big Ron Hunter, playing live against a backing track in the key of E.
I can't stop.
What's going on there? Like I said, it's the simplest form in the world, and it's all rock and roll, it's all blues, it's a lot of pop, and yet, as you said, you can't stop. Once it starts happening, it becomes organic, right?
You know,
I mean,
you feel it, man. You feel it. That's all blues is playing with a feeling.
Yeah.
And you feel it, and you hear it coming from the inside of you, you know, and then you got, you know, you got to move it with them fingers and then. But each time is different now. It's not the same every time.
Well, you have your own style. Your dad said, look, you got to play your own style and find your own style.
Right.
What
right.
is your style? What do you think?
Well, I call it, I was raised up and I used to hear squirrels running up and down the tree, you know, chasing each other. And I used to call it the Red Bank Squirrel Scratching Blues. That's what I call it, you know, years ago. And they say, and because I'm from the North Carolina where there's red clay and squirrels scratching up the tree, up and down, running up and down the tree. If you listen to my rhythm on the guitar, I got that rhythm from these squirrels chasing each other, mating or whatever they do when they're running up and down the tree. So you can kind of hear that little scratching if you listen to my rhythm, especially like on the acoustic guitar.
You recorded a few, a couple of albums, right?
Yes, yes. I just recorded one, I think it was last year, a year before, over in France with a French group with Raphael Imbert. And we just, this January, we played at the Village in New York City. And a couple of places there, you know, in New York we play to introduce the new album from France, you know, which is great.
Now, you had an opportunity. Somebody came up and offered you a chance to record an album, but you turned them down at one point, right?
Yeah, my good friend, the guy that gave me the name Big Ron Hunter.
What happened there?
I still recorded for him.
Oh, all right. So you did that.
Okay. So now we can get back to where we started from in Charleston, South Carolina. Because in Charleston, South Carolina, I met up with these guys from the Mississippi Living Blues. They heard me that night with Nappy Brown, which was the first night I played with him in Charleston, South Carolina at Cumberland's, a place called Cumberland's. We played there. Green button. I got a green cloth.
You got a green button and a green button.
So anyway, the next day I was just walking around Charleston shopping, and I ran into these two guys, Scott Bach and another fella, and they said, "We want to interview you. We heard you last night. And you sound like you're playing five guitars at one time." And also, we stayed up. We were trying to figure out who you sound like. And we couldn't find anybody to sound like you. So we'd love to interview you. And they said, "Do you mind going back to the hotel and letting us interview you?" So I said, "I wouldn't mind at all. Let's do it." And I said, "Now, you know, I can talk." They said, "We want you to start off from your childhood all the way up to now." And so I said, "Okay, I can do it." So we went back to the hotel, and we talked a little bit and everything, and they interviewed me.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing they did after they interviewed me, they said, "Well, look, do you have a CD?" And I said, "No." They said, "Well, we're going to pay for you to have a CD, and we want you to go in the blues field. So we're going to put you out there in the blues because they're going to pick you up better in the blues. And we're going to send you to a place where Rock House Records, which is well-known record label all over the world."
Mm-hmm.
So I said, "Okay." So they sent me to Roy Roberts. And I said, "Oh, wow, I already know Roy Roberts. He's a good friend of mine." And so I went to Greensboro and recorded Point Out the Blues. And I brought 15 songs to Roy Roberts to his studio. And so funny about that, I had a toothache. And I was so excited about recording. I recorded with pain.
So that's where the blues comes from.
That's where the blues come from.
Well, I'm sorry about your toothache, but I'm happy for the music. Big Ron Hunter, blues musician in Winston-Salem, part of the Music Maker Relief Foundation.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being part of our program.
And I thank you, and I thank you, Music Maker. It's such an honor, you know, to play for Music Maker. They're just great, and they did a lot for me.
You can find out more about Big Ron at our website, stateofthings.org. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stasio.
There's a better day. Play your cards right. Play your cards right. Play your cards right. Play your cards right.